All right. We're going to be here talking about Confessions of a Community Moderator today. Just myself, a little bit. Anybody who looked at the printed materials beforehand and said, where's Heidi Skinner, because I came to see her, I'm sorry, but she is not here. She had a family emergency that she had to take care of. So we've been working together on this for a while, but she couldn't be here, unfortunately. And so she asked me to step in and working here. My name is Chris Gokert. I am the president of Critical Mass. Critical Mass, we work with, for those of you who don't know, work with a number of brands, Nissan, Adidas, AT&T, Humana, the like. So, and on my panel here, I'll let everybody introduce themselves. I'll start with Nina.
I'm Nina Kester, and I'm the associate producer of social media for the brand Peanuts, as in Charlie Brown and Snoopy.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Russell. I'm a community manager at Anomaly New York, and the brand that I represent is Converse.
And I'm Annalise Kaler. I recently changed positions, but I was a community moderator for Aveda, and I'm the director of social media at Interpromote, and we moderate and work on brands like Four Seasons, Honda, Fisher-Price, and a handful of others.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as just to repeat there, our collective experience, a number of pretty cool brands, a lot of great stuff that we've encountered, especially these guys who are in it day-to-day are seeing, and we've had a lot of fun over the last little while, really exchanging war stories and having some good times. It's nice to see some instant camaraderie in this group when we get to see face-to-face. So we've been spending a lot of time the last few weeks on the phone. But that was like the basic stuff. I think what we're trying to get to is maybe some stuff that you haven't heard before, maybe some kind of stories you're able to take, learn some lessons from. We are calling it confessions. So why don't we just look at some stuff that maybe these guys didn't want to say. So here we go.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Russell. My community manager confession is that I hate overshares. I mean, I know that we're supposed to be fostering a nurturing community where people want to post everything that they have, but it overpowers all of the content that we put together so nicely to try to engage our community. I've made a list of those people that overshare, and I haven't figured out what to do with it yet, but it's going to be something amazing.
My name is Nina Kester, and my community moderator confession is people who like things way too much. And I'm talking about they go through your posts and just like every single thing that you do, no comments, no additional feedback. As a community moderator, you really want to give your community what they're looking for, and it's hard to curate or find a creative direction when all you're getting is a thumbs up. It's super encouraging, but it's also super frustrating.
Hello, I'm Annalise Kaler, and my community manager confession is that I keep a wall of shame in my office. Every community has somebody that goes a little bit crazy or posts something completely wrong on your wall. And so what I like to do is take a screenshot, post it up on my wall, and then instead of like bashing them in public or having to control myself in the online space, I can throw darts at them, I can throw blocks at them, and I can take all my aggression out of them on my wall. And then I am always reminded that no matter how crazy my day gets, I'm never that crazy.
Although you do throw stuff at the wall at people, so it's awesome. So what you're going to see, if anybody has any questions that they want to take us, we've got a list of stuff that we've been talking about that we want to share. So you can throw it up, hash mod confess, or if you have any confessions yourself that you'd like to share, maybe we can read them out as we go through this. So with that, we'll get rolling. Really, we'll start with probably a pretty easy one to get everybody warmed up. Last few days we've been talking, it's a lot about passion. These guys here, they're fantastic. They are absolute, you know, freaks, passionate about what they're in. They're living the community. And I think it was really interesting we started talking about, okay, so communities and the people that are within them are just, they want to share, and sometimes positively, sometimes negatively. So I guess my question would be to Nina is kind of, how do you get the best out of your passionate people? I'm sure Peanuts has a few fans.
We do have a few fans, and they have been posting sort of randomly on our page. We just launched last February, actually, and so this has all been very new for our entire community. And we were getting all these random pictures, and then eventually decided to curate and focus. We do our Fan Friday posts. We have regular people. There's one person who I usually rely on named Lori, who always comes to our defense or like helps me moderate the community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to be able to sort of focus our super fans in that direction.
Yeah, and Rebecca, I mean, you guys have 23 million, I believe. I mean, you said 26 if you combine 46. Sorry, keeps going up every time we talk. You know, when you look at these, I mean, I imagine you have some folks who just are right into it, and they must just, you know, like with Nina, just make your life a little bit easier, right?
They do. As a lifestyle brand, I think that our product has become a passion point for a lot of people, and so they're very passionate to kind of broadcast how they interact with the product. And, of course, that's what we like to see on a regular basis, so we always encourage that. By oversharing, I didn't mean those people. I meant the people that have nothing to say that overshare.
Now, on the flip side, you know, there's people who get a little bit overzealous. You know, when we were working with Nissan and Leaf, we had some folks, I mean, clean energy, electric cars, you know, the green team that was out there, I think, sometimes took liberties with the information that they had, and they felt that they became the experts, which they didn't mean any harm by it, but it definitely threw up a little roadblock, you know, or not roadblocks, but some challenges for us. Annalise, I'm sure with Aveda, you had a few of those.
Oh, definitely. If you're all familiar with the Aveda brand, you know, it's a lifestyle brand as well, and a lot of people are really connected to it. And the community there is kind of interesting because they'll, like, throw up, you know, an ingredient that's 18 letters long and ask you if you have any of that in your products. So it can be really, you know, difficult sometimes to answer that and comply with not only what your community expects of you, but how do you then comply with legal and what does marketing want you to say and how does your PR department want you to handle this? But one of the things that I think is interesting with that is that you find these people who feel that they are experts on your brand, and they'll answer before you, and they'll answer with misinformation. So you have to be really careful when that misinformation comes out, not only to correct it, but to do so in a way that doesn't discourage your community from continuing to participate or continuing to become a leader in your community too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so but how about maybe the brand bashers? You know, the people who really piss you off, who just are coming in because they're just, you know, almost social ruffians who just want to kind of cause some trouble. You know, what do you do? I mean, Rebecca, probably in your competitive market, you've seen a few of those.
Yeah, they're pretty easy to deal with. The community kind of bands together to shut them down, so it's a lot less work for me than you would think, which is kind of amazing. You know, they're very passionate about our product, and they really want to see the best of it broadcast and social and throughout the channels. And so if someone comes in and says things that are absolutely false or, you know, about a competitor, they come in and they protect the brand.
So internally, when something like that happens, folks who, you know, you guys live in this space all the time. You're pretty comfortable in it. But there's other folks who see negative comments or whatever appear online, and they probably freak out a little bit. Anybody, you know, they start deleting stuff. They try to ban people from the community, what have you. We've seen a lot of those. So, Annalise, you've got anything there?
Oh, I've got pages there. I think it's pretty, you know, like, I think what's kind of interesting, at least in my experience, is that when you're working with the different departments in an organization, especially a larger brand, they all have opinions. And from a traditional standpoint, you're dealing with a lot of people who understand that social is important, that being in these new spaces and participating in these new mediums is important as an overall strategy, but they're very afraid of it. And part of that fear is to instantly then shut people down. And so when I started at Aveda, the process was like that you can even respond to anybody in a community unless they ask a direct question, which to me is completely backward. And fortunately, I had a boss who was also fairly new to the brand. He's like, no, we're not going to do that. You just get in there and do your thing. But what's interesting is the response from departments like legal and even some of the higher ups who are very afraid of what this new territory means for a brand is to instantly shut things down. And in a way, they've got the blinders on to the potential that this can be for the brand. And so there have been many times when I've had to throw things at my wall of internal, you know, my wall of shame of internal people, where, you know, I've had to stand up and say, like, you know, you can't be deleting these things. You're censoring a community. And do you want to be that brand that gets pressed because you're censoring your community? And it takes a while to have a cultural shift in your organization. But it needs to happen.
So, Nina or Rebecca, when you guys look, we talked a lot about, you know, on that topic, we were going in and everyone says it. It's this idea of how do you let your brand grow? How do you get, you know, the advocates help push your brand forward? Instead of controlling them. And I think, you know, someone like Converse is really, they're really good at that kind of letting people play with their brand a little bit. Would you say? You know, they're able to extend it. They're able to let people kind of play, be advocates with it, and they don't come in and they don't hammer people down if they're kind of messing around with it too much.
Yeah, I agree. The advocacy for that brand was in place far before social was as big as it is today, and so it's just kind of keeping up with those advocates and making sure that they are happy and that they are happy to continue to support the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was just going to say, sort of following up on the sort of helping to guide your fans' efforts, we actually have a fellow in China who has customized a scooter to look like a giant Snoopy that he rides around the city. And so just sort of encouraging really innovative stuff like that. We also get a lot of posts of things that, like, are either really close to stuff that we license, mm-hmm. or are almost exact duplicates of those things. And we try and encourage the community to do more creative stuff and highlight those individuals and mm-hmm. really, really push the people that think outside the box.
Okay. Now, you guys showing, I mean, you get together right away. It's just you guys, obviously, instant connection. I mean, I know we've been talking for a while, but you guys just, you know, sharing all the stories, getting in, and a lot of camaraderie. Is there camaraderie when you get into your competitive brands? I mean, nobody hates Snoopy, right? Maybe the Red Baron. But, when you look at maybe Rebecca or Annalise, have you had a couple times where you've actually had other community moderators who maybe weren't necessarily friendly to your brand?
Yes. Aveda's owned by Estee Lauder and they also own MAC Cosmetics and Clinique and Origins, which is very closely, you know, Estee Lauder originally launched Origins to compete with Aveda before Horst finally sold Aveda to Estee Lauder. So even within that community, you know, being underneath the Estee Lauder umbrella within that, the sister brands were heavy competitors.
Mm-hmm.
You can bet your bottom dollar that as soon as Origins got 10,000 more fans, that there were extra meetings in marketing, which is interesting too, because as a community moderator, I mean, not to segue too far, but you know, for me, it wasn't all about the numbers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I don't want to speak for the other panelists, but for me, I'd much rather have 25,000 hyper-engaged, connected brand ambassadors rooting for my brand and spreading the word organically than otherwise. So sometimes there's that disconnect, and I think that when you start, you know, having like the community moderator off within like our sister company, absolutely, we were all friendly and we certainly shared best practices, but I went to sleep every night hoping to take them out. Mm-hmm. Sure.
So kind of moderator wars.
Kind of. I think it's all in good fun for the most part, but there are certainly, like, when you're looking at competitors, you know, you're not in this business necessarily to make friends with your competitors, but you want to make friends with your community, and I think mm-hmm. as long as you follow that, your community will eventually, you know, if it's thriving, you're winning, but mm-hmm. I think there is. I mean, there's a healthy sense of competition amongst communities, and if you don't believe that, then you're lying.
Rebecca, do you have anything you want to add on?
I would totally agree. I feel like the interactions are definitely quality over quantity. So if you have that engaged audience, you don't necessarily need to compete within the numbers game.
Cool. switching, I mean, you touched on this a little bit earlier, Annalise. I mean, right now, social is pretty much king. Everybody wants a piece of it. All the agencies claim that they can do social. All of the internal groups claim that they can do social. And everybody wants it. Now, the question is the ownership, do they want it because it's a shiny new toy where the dollars are, or do they really have expertise in there? And that's somewhat challenging. And you guys shared initially, we talked about some issues that you saw that they have to deal with day to day internally. But just before we get into that too much, your ability to deal with those internal issues might be exacerbated a little bit by or the problem of being able to deal with that is with the stereotypes. Everyone thinks that pretty much community moderators are, you know, general stereotype, 21-year-old intern just out of college. You can pay them $40,000, and it's awesome. Way cheaper than some expensive agency. In fact, I mean, we have met a lot of brands we've worked with who, when we've given them their social governance strategy and we've looked at the strategy with them, a lot of times they've said, hey, we can just hire some interns who can manage this, which is kind of dangerous, but I can understand the cost. You know, social's supposed to be pretty cheap. So, you know, how Nina, do you go about and build credibility if everyone thinks that you're not you?
Think.
Yeah.
Wait,
a young one, yeah.
I'm not 14, I'm 25.
Yeah.
And I did start moderating communities as an intern, but I was working for startup studios. I went to school for cartooning. My background is not necessarily in marketing or media. I've just always been a sort of a techie. My dad's a computer guy for the Navy Yard, so that might be part of it. But yeah, so I just kind of earned my stripes interning wherever I could during college. I interned for Scholastic doing research for their graphic novels department, trying to figure out like this whole, like Facebook wasn't even there yet, and they're like, what is this internet thing and how do you reach kids on there and their parents? So I did a research project for them. I spent a long time when MySpace was still around building MySpaces for small brands, and then eventually my connections at Scholastic led me to my first big job at Archie Comics, and I was really, it's a small, very collaborative community there. So everybody was able to support each other through figuring out this big conundrum. And everywhere I've worked is like a startup. So you get so much experience with like every second you're on the job,
mm-hmm.
you learn a new thing.
So Rebecca, you know, just changing gears slightly, how did you fall into your position?
Well, I have a background in marketing and fashion dually. And I've been playing around with computers since I was three. My mom teaches computers, and so I was reverse engineering floppy disks when I was 3 years old in the MS-DOS prompt, and so I've always been a huge tech nerd. And then once communities popped up, specifically some of the larger ones like Facebook and Twitter, I was one of the early adopters of that, and so I feel like my job is kind of at the intersection of marketing and fashion, and of course lifestyle. So that's kind of how I hopped into it.
Annalise?
Well, I'm going to really date myself here and tell you that I built a BBS in 1992 for some of those who are techies. And the internet was $8 an hour plus long distance. So I too started out as a techie, and I love technology. I loved DOS. I still do. I still have all my little programs. But it just kind of grew, and as my friends were going off to college and coming back with marketing, they were like, well, you've had email for a while. You kind of get how these networks work. And before long, you know, they were like, well, our company is trying to do more with social, and we don't really get it. How does it all connect? And I started consulting. And my background is that I was a makeup artist for a long time. And so, you know, segmenting and consulting on the side was my passion. I've always loved communities, and I volunteered. I still volunteer for a few communities on the web, through like LiveJournal, and a little bit old school, I know, but I love it. And you know, going to Aveda meant mixing two things that I really loved, and because, you know, I think what's important and kind of the takeaway here is from all three of us is that we all had a passion for what we ended up with, like in our areas of expertise. You know, I'm passionate about social, but I had an interest in beauty, and especially on the eco side, because I'm like, granola nerd. It's, you know, like all these things kind of make sense. And when you have that passion and you fall into the right community and it feels like home, you really find your stride and you can really, you know, do what you do. And we were kind of talking about this earlier where I felt very strongly and still feel very strongly that I never worked for the brand. I worked for that community of the brand because I'm there to act as the liaison. I'm there to be their voice because, you know, they're not going to call the 1-800 number anymore, not unless they want to complain. They may tweet, they may do all these things, but, you know, that's kind of hiring for, you know, an intern is great, but ROI implies that you've made an investment. So if you want to be taken seriously, invest in your community moderators and you'll get somebody with passion and enthusiasm.
So would you guys say, I mean, that you are, when you look at it, when you initiate a conversation, you're brought into the conversation, are you saying, look, I'm speaking for the community, or are you saying I'm speaking for the brand? You know, kind of what is your voice internally when you're dealing with, you know, because you've got marketing folks, you got PR folks, and you guys have a play in the brand, but also the customer. So, you know, how would you classify your position?
I know for Peanuts, it's sort of, I mean, I say that I represent our fans, and it's just a little hard to discuss that internally and use the term fans as a sort of blanket for our community. We have a really diverse group of people. We've got the comic book nerds, we've got parents, we've got lifelong fans who are collectors. There's a really crazy culture around the collection of licensed merchandise for Peanuts. So, you know, when I say I speak for the fans, it's kind of Lorax-y, isn't it? sorry, I just saw it the other week.
Yeah.
So when I say I speak for the fans, I have to also at the same time kind of clarify, like, which set of fans am I speaking for?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of roll that into how that comes full circle.
And internally, how, like, you know, there's folks who are probably saying, hey, from a marketing perspective, we should be able to be doing this. Are you the one who's kind of jumping in going, well, you know, do they look at you like, oh, here comes community girl going to tell us that they don't like it? You know, how are they, you know, kind of reacting to, you know, your approach when you do start speaking on behalf of your the fans and the base that you have?
Maybe positively and negatively. Our more marketing people are in New York, and I'm on the West Coast, in a small town.
So you hide through time zones?
So I hide a little bit through time zones. Is it 5 o'clock on the East Coast? Can I post that other thing I wanted to do? But, yeah, I mean, we have clashed at times. The New York group is much more celebrity and, like, hot, like, pop culture-based, and I mean, the reason I was hired is because my background is in comics, and it's like, I'd rather see someone. We've had celebrities from Big Bang Theory, like, repost us. We live tweet when we air events for, like, a Charlie Brown Christmas and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we've had, like, a Big Bang Theory cast members retweet us, and I'm like, that's so awesome. And then I talked to the New York office, and they're like, we're having a Twitter party with Desperate Housewives. And I'm like, what? What does that have to do with Peanuts? Okay. And I kind of just, you guys handle that one, and I'll do the other part. So you just kind of compromise sometimes.
I'm the redheaded stepchild of this, in that I'm in a sense that I have definitely not afraid to be vocal, and have ruffled plenty of feathers doing so. And did so at Aveda too. You know, like, I always like to think of the user experience when marketing would bring me in and have an app, and I'm like, okay, so this is going to be, 10 clicks before they can finally get to the result. I don't know any community member who wants to participate with our brand so much that they are willing to go through 10 clicks and upload pictures and then tweet this and then share this and then spam their friends. And so sometimes you do have to be, you know, adamant and hold your ground. So when I go in there, I'm speaking not only, like, I'm definitely an advocate for the community, and I understand why we're in that space to begin with. Like, I do realize there's a marketing purpose. I do realize that there's a message that needs to be communicated. But at what expense? Do I want to turn off 10% of the community at that expense? Or is there a way that we can rework this to accomplish the goals? And I think if you go into it with that approach and just kind of say, you know, let's, you know, it's just kind of like usability testing for a website. You know, really, is this functionality benefiting your user? So you go back to the same thing. Is this really benefiting our fan? And remembering, in the social space, businesses are a guest. You're there by permission. And in one simple click, you're gone. So if you want to captivate that audience, you play by their terms. And that's what I feel like, as a community moderator, you're there to remind the rest of your organization about.
Cool. Oh, very passionate. Now, some advice for people getting into this role, like, if they're wading into a hotly kind of political kind of environment, you know, and they're trying to buff up their resume, would you suggest that they go after one of those cool titles like Ninja or Guru or something, or do you just think community moderator is the way to go? I know I heard you applied for the Ninja title, Nina, so...
It does, well, because my name is Nina, Ninja has kind of been a nickname personally, having nothing to do with social. I think that if you call yourself a guru or a ninja, I think that, like, the time of that has definitely, like, lasted 5 seconds and passed. And if you call yourself a community manager, a social media producer, my title, Archie, was director of new media because I did PR and like half a dozen other things. Mm-hmm. So using more professional titles helps bigger organizations understand like where you might fit in with them.
Mm-hmm. So as social is maturing and it gets, you know, there's a ton of hype around it and it's a pretty hot topic. And I imagine you engage, you've talked about, you know, with, you know, you're in with executives, C-suites, older folks like myself, who sometimes I think a lot of folks will say, hey, we're an expert at it. My kid got this Pinterest account and why aren't we doing anything on Pinterest? So let's go. You know, how do you deal with this hype of things that comes at you that everybody has an opinion because anecdotally one of their kids, friends, somebody, another brand has done it? So, Nina, how do you – I think you wrote a blog post on this, right? Like, how do you stay on top of the technology and trends? Was that you?
Yeah, that was me. I've been thinking about that article ever since I wrote it, and it – like. I was very general in that article, so like, you know, just stay up to date on blogs, follow Mashable, read whatever you can. Even if it's just like 10 minutes a day, just set it aside, go through the social portion of Mashable and just get back in touch. But I think the biggest asset for me, and it may be because of my age and there are a lot of early adapters that I'm friends with, so my social network personally is the biggest thing in terms of helping me keep on top of stuff.
And so, Rebecca, how do you educate your folks? Because we just mentioned this morning, Google Plus is a great example. You know, loads of people are on it. So the minute people see that there's eyeballs someplace, they want to go there. So, you know, could you maybe share a little bit what you're talking about this morning and kind of how you go about educating your folks?
They're all very tech savvy as well. I just feel like you have to have a pretty strong point of view on what you want to accomplish within that platform, and just make sure to educate everyone within your organization and make sure that it's something that is organic for the brand and that they aren't just there because everyone else is, because in a case like Google Plus, everyone's there, yes, but no one's doing anything, and that's far poorer of a brand experience than just staying where you were and engaging with the fans that you already have.
Cool. Annalise, you want to? Anything
I just think I think there's, you know, all the major tech blogs and everything else, they cover what you kind of need to know, and it's important to stay on top of. But some of the savviest people I've seen who don't have experience but, you know, kind of want to get into it, or that you go make a case for it internally in your organizations, pulling copies of that, it's, you know, I've never met an executive who's going to argue when I pull a social media article from the Wall Street Journal and say, here you go, this is why I said this. Here's, you know, 10 other people. And now the traditional press and some of the voices that speak to traditional marketers, traditional C-suite execs, they're starting to cover this kind of technology as well. And that can be a real resource for you beyond what, you know, some of them won't understand what Mashable is. Some of them will not understand that TechCrunch means something to us, you know. So I think that's important, too, to troll those areas also.
Okay. The New York Times is really good about that.
Yeah, definitely.
So we talked a bit about marketing, PR, kind of navigating those. You know, you guys, it seems that it we're kind of moving. But and you'd mentioned this before. What about legal? They kind of keep us out of trouble. You know, we know that there are certain legislations that are there that we have to kind of go through. Working with our Humana client, there are pretty strict kind of legal terms that we have to stick with, and they're not meant to at all kind of kind of impede us, but we just have to kind of be able to understand, especially with, you know, anything that's got, you know, personally identifiable information in there. But, you know, can they slow you down a little bit?
Or a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, all the time.
Is there an education process, or kind of what did you, what have you done when that situation has hit you, Annalise?
Well, legal was definitely the thorn in my side a lot of times, but I ended up with a very good working relationship with our attorney when I was at Aveda. Aveda is a very complicated brand, and there's high expectations out there, and more so than any of the other lauder brands, I think they really had to toe the line, the expectations, and of course, when you're working with anything that's natural and organic, natural or organic, I should say, you know, there's a lot of legalities that really can come into play. And the way you phrase something, like I just did, natural and organic, they're not mutually exclusive, right? So you have to be very careful in status updates or tweets what you're communicating, because, you know, you could face a lawsuit for something like that. Mm-hmm. So legal definitely slowed some things down. There were times when I definitely just decided to post first and ask for forgiveness later if I needed to, because I felt the message was strong enough and consistent enough throughout the rest of, like, you know, like my boss was fine with it, or, you know, some of the other executive level people were okay with it. And they just decided, you know what, you know, we've got your back on this one. Or, you know, I just did what was right for the brand and what I knew we had published elsewhere. And that's what really kind of gets you. I'm like, okay, so we have this published on our website in 8 different places, but I can't post it on Facebook, really? So that's where, you know, education with legal becomes a necessity.
But and I think you, Rebecca, you were saying you've got fantastic legal folks, right? Don't want to just bash on legal here, but
I can't really speak to this. They've been pretty amazing as far as approvals, so I can't speak to this point.
But there is a balance, and it's probably either more educated folks or, you know, and I think it's. But you were saying when you went to. Because I don't want anybody tweeting, like, you know, post first, ask forgiveness later. Because you had people backing you up before you did that.
You know, it's right? Not, you know, like you look at, like, that example of the American Red Cross when somebody, you know, tweeted that they were going to go get slizzard. You know, it's not like I went rogue like that and just went off on this. You know, it's on, you have to make sure it's always on message. It's, you know, on point with your brand. It's in the brand voice. It's still doing those things. But, you know, and in my case, I'm like, well, you know, we have the same messaging everywhere on the website, verbatim. And then, why can't I put that on social? And it's, and a lot of that, I think, you know, legal is necessary. You look at what's going on with Pinterest right now and all the concerns that come up with, you know, can we repin this? How do we know it's properly attributed? You know, it's a necessary thing. And I know we're going to see an influx of social specialties in the area of law. But at the same time, it's also important for companies to not be so afraid of the legality that they end up, you know, hindering themselves or, you know, stunting their growth because of it. It is a fine line.
Cool. But, and we talked about mistakes happen. I think 98% of community managers admitted to making some sort of mistake, spelling, grammar, even posting misinformation. Rebecca, I believe you, I don't know if you want to repeat this, but the one you told us your first day of work.
Yeah, first day on the job.
Yeah.
I posted 50 pictures in rapid succession. That was a big oops. I thought I was gonna get fired that day. So, but I think that's probably the biggest snafu I've had.
Yeah,
which is not that bad at all.
Nina, anything you've done that you kind of wish you could take back?
I probably blacked it out. I mean, there's lots of, you're always gonna make that typo, and you just have to, like, hope that you have a strong enough bond with your community that they forgive you for it, and they're like, "Oh, that's cute. You're a human being." So don't be terrified of typos. I do check every tweet like 3 times now before I send it out. And then, otherwise, I mean, yeah, there's probably been tons of stuff along the way, but I can't recall.
Nothing there.
Going right now.
Annalise, yeah. Anything?
Yeah, we used to host a lot of live stream events, like, through our Facebook page, and one time during an entire hour-long live stream, I called a major, major, major person in the film the wrong name the entire time. I'm like, oh, and blah, 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 and you and this is so-and-so introducing, and they're like, yeah, we need to reshoot all that for the edited version. It was highly embarrassing.
So, those are honest mistakes, but other honest mistakes that can be much more tragic are, you know, this fine line, and you guys are talking about the middle, like this idea of being, you know, kind of, you know, marketing PR, and everyone's got a great idea, right? It's a great idea. It'll be out there. It'll get people's attention. Everyone's going to retweet. It's going to be great. But there's this fine line between a killer campaign and then kind of somewhat of a, you know, the McD stories as an example, where at its peak, it was generating basically like 1,500 negative tweets in an hour. You know what? It was when you go listen to what they're trying to do is a nice idea. But, you know, how do you think ahead? Like, if you guys are thinking about the brand, you know your community, are you engaged in those conversations? Or how do you kind of get your guys to maybe, you know, it's a good idea, but... Or maybe more interesting to the crowd is, can you tell us, A, good idea that you saw maybe could go the wrong way, so you kind of you persuaded people to not follow it?
Well, I have one. I can jump in while you guys are thinking of yours, and that was what marketing likes to refer to as the popular sampling program on Facebook. It was used as a fan number-driving activity, and the minute it came to me, I'm like, this is going to be a disaster. And if you've ever participated in a sampling promotion on Facebook, you know that they're just chaos, unless you are a big enough brand that you decide that you have the extra money to include like server bandwidth and everything else to go along with the thousands of people who are going to be jumping on your page at once. It's just a bad idea. And in my case, I looked at it and I thought, this is great. Our fans would love to have free samples. Oh no, this is for fan acquisition. Oh really? So what's going to happen? Well, we're going to seed the freebie blogs with this offer. Well, if you're at all tuned into like the freebie blogs in the space, sure enough, what happened? We had 30,000 samples available. Like one tweet that marketing decided to send out or email to these freebie blogs, about 300 or 400 tweets later, we had crashed a Facebook server. Thousands and thousands of frustrated people who were never introduced to our brand before had this as their first brand introduction experience. A crash server, frustrating experience, wanted this sample. And on top of that, they weren't even the targeted fans. You know, Aveda's a luxury brand. Why are we giving away free samples through a freebie blog for somebody who's never going to spend $90 on a shampoo bottle? Never going to happen. So in that case, I was adamantly against it. And I was the one who literally responded. I think over the three promos that I moderated, I responded to something like 67,000 comments. And I had them all copied and pasted. But to me, to try to salvage it from a PR perspective and say, hey, we're really sorry about this experience, here's how you can still participate, it was crucial to try to maintain all of those fans that we were giving this experience to. So for me, that's just something I was like, never again, never again, drawing the line.
Nina or Rebecca, anything you want to talk about that's on the cutting room floor? That's okay.
Controlling, Peanuts has been trying to work a lot more with our licensees in terms of helping to promote them and trying to sort of discuss what the appropriate number of shares or retweets from different brands has been. Really difficult, especially around Christmas, because that's our time. And so I basically was able to negotiate with our marketing team that Twitter was a much better platform to be constantly retweeting our licensees, because it's much more time-based. So every hour, somebody's tweets are probably going to filter out, and it's okay to see a constant stream of updates. But on Facebook, to try and do like three different posts from licensees in a single day is gonna, like, your fans will start to revolt, and they'll be like, stop spamming my Facebook stream. And we actually did have, before I was able to talk them out of it, we did have a fan who posted that. And oddly enough, our community just like lashed out and like attacked him and was like, if you don't like Snoopy, you can leave. So, you know, thankfully our fans are still great, but I still want to look out for them, even especially because they have our back.
All right, so we've been talking a ton about you guys are spending time researching technology and consumer trends. You're moderating the communities. You're out talking to your different groups internally. You know, we looked at just, you're looking at how do we have campaigns that are going. This is marketing. This is PR. I mean, you guys are up to your eyeballs in stuff. It's really a 24/7 gig, and I'm sure that. Can you unplug? Can you get a day off, or is it the worst job in the world from a work-life balance perspective? Rebecca?
I would say there's a minimal work-life balance on the side of life. But I've pretty much worked every single day since I started. Christmases, birthdays, New Year's, Thanksgivings. My grandmother has cursed my company several times. And I was on Thanksgiving in a corner on a laptop trying to start a promotion. So, I mean, it's just those are the breaks, It's the nature of the job, but it is still very fulfilling.
My first job with Archie Comics, I remember I was about I was there for like 7-8 months, and they're like, we're going to strike a deal with you. We'll buy you an iPhone if you agree to be available 24/7. And I was like, I'm young, I can roll this. And I did it, and it was the worst mistake of my life. I was in the office from like 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. almost every day of the week, and then available on call no matter where I was the entire time I was working there.
So who's been watching while you've been here hanging out? Or is that what you've been checking your phone most of the time?
Well, I'm actually paying attention to the mod confest. Yeah. Students, I'm really enjoying them. So I've been working to transition a lot of shared responsibilities or even more responsibilities with our team in New York and really training them on what we've discovered in our launch over the past year. And I'm moving a lot more towards the creative side. Mm-hmm. And so they've been watching over it while I've been here. And it's even when I signed on there, part of the thing was like, you guys understand that if somebody posts something on the Snoopy Facebook page, it can probably wait until Monday. Like, nobody's gonna freak out. And if so, like, our fans will flag it and it'll hide until I can go in and moderate.
Rebecca? Since you're the 24/7 one, who's watching shop for you?
There's a huge team.
Yeah,
it's not just me by any means. Right now, though, I did check my email 5 minutes ago. Sorry, I'm always on it. Also,
so you're not able to be like, you know, Nina. You'll be able to, hey, everybody, I'm taking a day off, and the community's like, great, Nina. We'll watch shop for you. It's okay.
Unfortunately, because of sort of the branding structures, I'm not able to admit that I'm an individual person.
Yeah.
So I really wish I could do that, because I think it makes it closer together. And people really warm up once they feel like they see a face with a brand. And so on my personal accounts, I'm always like, hey, yeah, this happened on the community. And so, like, all of my friends know. But so, I'm not able to leave that personal note.
So when you do unplug, I think, Annalise, you had a good story about a certain plane ride.
Yeah, I have a lot of good stories. For me, you know, like, talking about being plugged in 24/7, I feel when I'm moderating communities very protective of those communities, and even though they're not mine, it's like checking in on them and making sure everybody's okay doesn't feel like this burden to me. Like, I just want to make sure, number one, because it means that I don't have as much catching up to do on Monday. But then for another, it just, you know, you want to make sure that there are no fires to put out, because you feel this sense of, mm-hmm. you know, loyalty to them, just as they feel loyal to your brand and you. So the first time I had to go out of town for a work-related event, you know, turning it over to a second moderator, I got off the plane and I was like, wait, what just happened to all my posts? We didn't approve that. That didn't go through. You know, I created a content. You know, I run everything by an editorial calendar. It's approved a month in advance. I get it all taken care of. There's no, you know, craziness. And I'm like, that wasn't on today's schedule. This isn't what we had planned. And all of a sudden, this like great interactive content turned into, wait, let's spam with marketing while she's away. And it was really frustrating, because, you know, it's important then. You know, what we learned in that is that we didn't set the expectation, and that, you know, it's really important, especially because I was housed in global communications and PR, and my backup was housed in marketing, to really communicate what is the brand voice, how do we communicate things. You know, we're a luxury brand. We don't use the number 4 in our tweets. We spell it out. You know, we're a luxury brand, and this, you know, these are all really crucial things. So, you know, like, when you come back and you see it's been hijacked, it's confusing to the community when they've been getting this kind of constant, regular communication that's on point, that's on brand, speaks in the tone that they're used to, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, crazy message. It's confusing, and I was personally offended on behalf of my community members.
And actually, the you know, editorial calendar, I know we do this a lot with all of our clients, and especially with Nissan. Actually, even a few years ago when we were working with Adidas and we set up Riot in Amsterdam, you know, we talked a lot about the idea of, you know, kind of having your planned communications being, and then you had proactive stuff that you knew was coming up that wasn't on the calendar, and then of course you're reactive, you know, when shit really goes awry and you have to get in there and drive it. So I think that's extremely important that, you know, I think a lot of folks, when they're looking at the community, it isn't just, just let her fly, and it's not just on, you know, ad hoc marketing campaigns. It needs to be looked at yearly, and from an editorial calendar. I think with that, I'd like to thank you all. So far, we're going to open up to questions now. I got a couple here, and you know, just thanks for listening. Thanks to you guys. It's been a great few days and a few weeks coming up. It's been a lot of fun, and just some great stuff. Tons of stories. So, I had one just that came up just before you served. That's okay. I'll be that annoying person. You know, when you stand there at line customer service and the guy answers the phone, you're like, "But I'm here." So. I'll change that. I hate that. I'll reverse it. What do you... What?
Hi, my name is...
Yeah.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be cool. My name is Eric. I am the former director of digital marketing at Converse.
Okay.
So I can vouch for Rebecca and want to give her a shout-out for being a great community manager and a good brand advocate for us.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I now work at a... Yeah, yeah. now we'll get a different brand, and I'm asking this for my community manager. I would love to know the toolkit that the panel uses for the fire hose of inbound data and feedback from fans, and also the toolkit that you use for publishing, monitoring, just whatever your magical dashboard in the sky is. Thank you.
Well, I am constantly, I'm always logged into all the social networks. On my phone, so I can moderate and take place on the go. Not take place, but, you know, interact on the go. Also, we do have a cultural calendar, editorial calendar, things like that that are already put in place. And, of course, just as far as putting out fires, yeah, I check probably every 2 hours just to make sure that there's nothing that has happened while I was trying to live.
Yeah.
Oh.
You
know,
higher yeah. What tool set do you guys use? Yeah.
I went to Social Media Week out in San Francisco, and I got to meet the people who run a company called This Moment. They did the Toyota campaign like right after they were having lots of troubles, and did a beautiful job of it. And I got to do a sales walkthrough of their system, and if I could get the budget for it, that it would make my life. Like, it's so beautiful and amazing. I was, like, almost crying while I was looking at it. But if you don't, as most of us don't, have a huge budget to back it up, I think that Hootsuite's either their I think it's pro level, or even the basic account is probably a really good toolkit to start with.
I agree on that. I think that's the budget situation is something that's really important to bring up. Because a lot of companies just aren't willing. They want, give us ROI. We want to know exactly, you know, well, give me the tools and I'll give you some interesting stats. But there's a lot you can do on a very low budget. Facebook Insights, once you get comfortable working with that Excel spreadsheet, make it your bitch. It will do everything you want. it really will. You just have to be comfortable with data. Same with Hootsuite. You know, it's a great tool. I use it personally. The pro account's great. They've got an enterprise system that allows 20 people to use it. It's awesome. Another great tool is TweetReach. If you want to see the reach of your tweets and the impressions and how many people are spreading it out, Google Plus has an awesome feature called Ripples for all of your public posts where you can see who shared what and how many people they reached, and you can see the actual names of the people they reached. It's right in the drop-down menu on all your public things. As far as the power tools, though, I know a lot of people really like Radian 6. I've used it. It's great. In the Asian countries, Brandtology is excellent if you have a business that's going strong in Asia. They focus specifically on the Asian languages, which a lot of the more common tools don't do. And then my other favorite tool that I like a lot is an app in Chrome called Social Bro. It's kind of in beta, but it's really interesting. It gives you some really interesting Twitter data also. But Facebook Insights, once you learn to really manipulate that data, you will find so many opportunities to really make your case for anything that you need.
The other thing about using like third-party features like that, just to know that like Facebook will ping you for using Hootsuite. And you also have that little thing at the bottom of all your posts that says, like, this was sent by Hootsuite. So depending on your branding, that may or may not work. I know a company named Vitrus here. Mm-hmm. We use them in a monthly trial basis, but there were some kinks that just, like, were off. Like, they have this really awesome feature where when you post a link and all you can get is that weird banner ad on the side from the website, you can replace it with your own image. And I was like, yeah, this is great. This is so awesome, because a lot of comics blogs end up doing that. But when you click on the image once it's posted, it takes it to like where that image is hosted on Vitru instead of the link. So, I mean, they may have worked that out by now. I was like, you guys should really change this and let me know.
Yeah.
And also TwitSprout is another smaller one that I'm checking out.
TwitSprout,
yeah.
As far as third-party tools, I'm of the impression that a lot of them have the same limitations just based on their APIs. So I try to post as organically as possible through, you know, Twitter, Facebook proper. But I will say that for analysis of tweets, People Browser is amazing.
Yeah.
And they let you use it far beyond the free trial. And you can see historic posts that are even beyond the fire hose that Twitter does, the regular 7 days. Like, you can go back 3 years and see what you posted and who it's influencing in the categories of those people. So marketers, entertainment, action, etc. So that's a really good one that I use. But other than that, I just do everything pretty organically.
Cool. Another question?
I don't think it's gone that far. I think it's just that they want like a unified brand identity that's centered on the brand itself as it's existed for just over 60 years now, and that they're not really interested in making like a mini celebrity out of me, and which is okay. I can deal with that. But yeah, so I do try and be really open on all my own social networks about like who I work for, and just try and be active so that people can reach out to me if they can find me.
Yeah. Thank you. My name is Rob Mann. With the growth of localization of a lot of the social media, you're getting a dynamic in some cases where community management becomes inherently much more local. Domino's in Chicago is a great example where, you know, that gentleman just basically has become world known for what he does in terms of community management. That originated in the fact that he owned the franchises and had inherently local interests. My question to you is, as social media becomes much more localized, do you know of or foresee franchising as a more formal business model in community management?
Well, I'll touch on that one only because a lot of the organizations that my agency works with are franchise organizations. So they have a corporate house, and then they do have franchise locations, and trying to merge the two and getting a social media strategy that not only addresses corporate needs but addresses the needs for franchises also is a challenge. And it can be, especially when you're working in certain demographics or certain verticals. They don't always mesh. But I do think that local community management is really important, especially for franchises. And I think that's a great way to generate leads on franchises. Social is so transparent. It really offers an opportunity for potential franchisees to see what your business is about. And if you're leading in social and you're putting together a good corporate social strategy, you can demonstrate that you've got that leadership. It's a great advertising tool for your business, not only from the higher level, but then as it breaks down into the different, you know, franchise levels and local levels. You look at Yelp has local community managers. It's important. It gets the word out. You know, a lot of business, everything is going local. Search is going local. How is SEO integrated into that? So there's all of these questions that are coming in and that are becoming more important in community management, and localization is definitely one of them. But I do think that localizing and creating opportunities for your franchises to participate in a corporate strategy will make your corporate brand stronger, and it'll give your local results a better performance too.
And some of the newer tools that are coming out are actually trying to get it down to that local level, and they're actually trying to figure out a way to capitalize on that and without being very, very expensive. So there, a lot of them are in their infancy right now, but we've met with a couple, and of course their name escapes me right now, but I will look up. But you know, they've actually talked to us about it, and some of the limitations, you know, folks like Radiant 6 will be able to talk about that, but it can get very, very expensive when you start to take it down to, you know, more local levels. So there's a couple newer brands that have come up, and I will find the name of those and tweet that out. So, another question. Sorry. Yeah. 10 minutes.
Jessica,
yeah.
When those come up on your communities, do you have a customer support division that handles that? And what are the best practices that you've used? Or is your customer support, are they right on pages for you, helping you out?
I would say to diffuse the situation as expeditiously as possible. I mean, we have community guidelines in place for canned responses for customer service concerns specifically. But I just feel like the timeliness of handling the concern is probably the biggest thing. But I don't think that customer service is a separate function, you know, apart from social moderation. It's just a part of it.
I'll say that with the Peanuts brand, we've had a hard time with customer support because, again, we are a licensor, so we don't really have much involvement once the product leaves. I mean, half the time our licensees kind of put stuff out on the market before we approve it. So we get questions, and we can't always answer them. So we lean really heavily on our community to help with that customer support, and they do come through a lot of the time.
At Aveda, one of the things, there's a two-pronged answer to this. I spent 2 days in customer service before I started community moderating there. It's important to me not only to understand how they're answering the questions on the phone from a brand consistency standpoint. You want to be able to give the same answer on Facebook that they're going to get if they call or email. And so it was important. I sat down with the management. I sat down and listened to calls all day, listened and learned how the verbiage is, how everything kind of goes. And then I was given access to the same database of answers as the customer service team so that I didn't always have to bother them. But if something wasn't in the database or if it was a sensitive issue, such as, you know, animal testing, we have very specific language surrounding that. Aveda doesn't test on animals, but there's a very specific way that Estee Lauder requires that to be answered. So I did have a customer support person that was my key person where I could cut and paste or link to it, say, hey, I need this to be routed. And it was kind of escalated up through the channels so that we could get an answer right away. But most of the time, having access to that database and going through customer training, customer service training was crucial to being successful in that role just based on that. The other thing is it's a similar situation. Speaking from the agency side, we moderate for some communities, and absolutely do we have in place a customer support person. Guarantee you the marketing manager doesn't have all the answers when they're asking about, can you tell me about part number 9037 and where I can get a replacement? Marketing manager doesn't always know that, but our customer support person does, so we do have that in place.
I guess the broader question is, how do you steer conversations into a constructive place, or do you let people vent and move on, or empathize and kind of show your human side through those interactions?
I've had to redirect a couple of things like that. We had issues where we were posting photos just like, hey, here's a fun image of, you know, Lucy pulling the football in front of Charlie Brown, and then people would tag it so quickly that nobody else could. So we'd offer suggestions like, hey, you know, Facebook only lets you tag this many people, so if it's filled, like, repost it on, you know, download it and repost it on your page and tag it again, or trying to point, I'll do some research and try and find things. Like, if they have a particular issue with, like, a timeline-specific feature, then I'll do some research on the Facebook forums and be like, hey, you know, you can kind of head over this direction and they might be able to help you out. So trying to redirect to helping them solve their issue, yeah.
Cool.
So a lot of conversation has been about Facebook and Twitter and all that. I wonder if you could speak a little bit to, are there differences when you're moderating on your own platform? So if you run your own forums or things like that, are there different strategies to avoid?
Well, I still moderate on LiveJournal, a couple of communities that shall remain nameless. for the sake of protecting my co-moderators. No, but there are different rules. Like, you know, when you're co-moderating, especially in a team, and maybe you can probably speak more to this too, but, you know, in, when you have a large community, you have to set the rules and then abide by them. So, like in my case, there, you know, I can be much more. I can be an individual more so than a brand. So, me as an individual, I'm much more like to the point, and if you haven't noticed, to the point, and not really afraid to say anything. And so, I'll never forget the first time I had an incident with a volunteer community member. Her nickname is the Beefy Lemon, in case you ever want to Google it. You know, it's like, it was one of those things where, you know, you have to just, you know, I'm a person and I'm doing a volunteer service for a group that you are, you know, volunteering to participate in. You can volunteer to not participate in it if you don't like the way I run things. And that's kind of, you know, you can't be that way in a brand, but it's definitely different when you have your own voice. So I think if you're thinking about starting your own group, having a set expectations about how you'd like to moderate that from the start and setting the expectations from the start is the only way to get through that without creating a wall of shame to throw things at.
Yeah. And on the Peanuts homepage, we actually have this really cool little word cloud thing called, like, actually this year is the anniversary of the printing of the Happinesses books. If you don't know what they are, they're like the greatest little joy you'll find. And so we ask our fans to go to our homepage and enter in what happiness is to them. And we have this really cool little technical trick that you guys helped us set up where our fans can, you can go to the page, enter in whatever you want, and then it'll appear on your computer because it's cached. Mm-hmm. And but the rest of the internet will not see it until I go in there and approve it, yes or no. So it's kind of funny because I'll see really inappropriate things where it's like someone's like testing it out. They're like, can I say this word? And then they see it pop up on their screen and they're like, ooh. So then it's just like a long stream all from like the same person after that of like all these terrible things. And I'm just like, yeah, that select, delete. You had your fun.
We've got time for one quick question. I apologize. We weren't able to get to the ones that tweeted in. So I'm very, very sorry. Your last one.
Hi, my name is Laura. I manage community for a local Austin company called HomeAway.com. And my question is around ambassadors, community ambassadors. You've mentioned advocates, and I wondered if any of you have formalized programs around your advocates, and if so, how do you motivate, what have been the techniques you found that best motivate your advocates to help, whether it's moderating or contributing or just galvanizing?
I feel like allowing them the opportunity to actually have a type of voice around your brand, you know, they're obviously very passionate about what you're doing, and if you allow them to showcase that passion within your community, that's probably the best thing that you can do, and also praising them for doing so on a consistent basis so that they know that you're paying attention and you're not just going through the motions of social. We do have a program in place. I can't really speak to it at this point, but it's going to allow our audience to do a lot of amazing things. That's probably my favorite word, amazing, if you haven't noticed.
They'll give us a hook at some point, so keep going.
Okay. So one of my biggest treats is getting to go to Comic-Con and actually meet some of the people in person. And so just kind of letting them step behind the curtain and talk to, like, somebody who works there. Or, like, we're fairly open about, like, once we've met someone at Comic-Con, it's like, yeah, if you're up in Santa Rosa, because not many people tend to get up there, so I guess that kind of filters it out if you're brave enough to get there. Then, you know, come on, yeah, send me an email, we'll show you around the office. Like, that kind of, that, like, really sparks, you see the little twinkle in their eyes. And then the last little thing is swag. Buttons, definitely. People are, at least especially in the comic industry, they're huge collectors, so it's like, oh, you're going to give me a set of, like, all 5 buttons from Comic-Con without me having to come back every single day? I love you! So you just by being a friend, you earn a lot of respect from them.
All right. We got the hook. Thank you all. It was great. Great activity here. Thanks a lot. Thanks, guys. That was awesome.